He therefore engages all his possessions in the service of the Lord. A devotee knows very well that everything, even his body, belongs to the Supreme Lord. If one lives perfectly in such Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood that he is especially favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conclusion is that one's being deprived of his wealth is not to be considered a special mercy of the Lord. If one continues in his opulent position but does not become unnecessarily proud, falsely thinking that he is the proprietor of everything, this is the Lord's special mercy. Oma jnana timarandasha gananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So Nagaraj Prabhu told us that we were going to get here when he gave class the other day on Monday this week. The verse dealt with the special mercy of the Lord being that he takes away all of the opulences. That's how his special favor is to be known. And in today's verse, we see just the opposite. That the special mercy of the Lord is that when the devotee continues in one's opulent position. But there is a caveat. Caveat is a two-letter word. Anybody remember what it was from the purport? Two-letter word. If. If is the caveat. If one continues in his opulent position, but does not become unnecessarily proud, falsely thinking that he is the proprietor of everything, this is the Lord's special mercy. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, I find one of the most intriguing fun and instructive things are when we come across opposites and how Srila Prabhupada particularly and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in general deals with this subject of opposites, how things are opposites or contradictory or not contradictory. For instance, I know that many times Srila Prabhupada would give, or devotees would ask Srila Prabhupada questions, well, Prabhupada, should we do this or that? And Prabhupada's answer was, do both. And so how do you do both? The choices are diametrically opposed sometimes, but still the answer was both. Or Prabhupada told that story about the sage offering blessings. He offered blessings to four different people. To one person he said, you live forever. To the next person he said, you die immediately. To the next person he said, don't live, don't die. And then for the fourth person he said, live or die, koi baat nahi, it doesn't matter. You can live or die. And so, How are these contradictions, how are these opposite instructions reconciled? Well, that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness, that it does reconcile all these apparent contradictions. We just have to try to understand how. And indeed, that is a very central theme to Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, you know, also this idea of seeing the same situation in different ways was very much a part of Arjuna's dilemma. There's a verse in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text number 30, where Arjuna is speaking after Krishna has told him about the arrangement of the fight, how he would have to fight his relatives. Arjuna was seeing things a little differently. And he said, Nimittani cha pashyami viparitani keshava. Nimittani cha pashyami viparitani keshava. He said, I see only causes of misfortune. Krishna, you are my friend, you're my well-wisher, and you're urging me to fight this battle, but nimittani cha pashyami viparitani keshava. I see just the opposite. This word viparitani means just the opposite. So he was seeing just the opposite of what Krishna was instructing. Krishna was telling him, you fight, win the kingdom, enjoy, but no, he said, I see just the opposite from your instructions. And so we know that the whole Bhagavad Gita was spoken, and the result was that at the end, Krishna asked Arjuna, Arjuna, so now what do you think? Are you still seeing this viparitani, just the opposite, in the words of my instructions? And Arjuna said, no. Nasta moha, my illusion is vanquished. And now I can see that what you're saying is correct, and that is the cause of my fortune. So the basis of Bhagavad Gita is dealing with these apparent contradictions. And so these kind of contradictions we'll find all the time. But the interesting thing is that they are not spiritual contradictions. The material conception and the material understanding is what makes it appear to be a contradiction, not the spiritual instruction. Even if Prabhupada is saying, do both. The apparent contradiction is in our misunderstanding due to our material contamination, not due to the spiritual instruction. So, when we have this contradiction that's presented to us in these two verses, two ways of understanding the special mercy of the Lord, the question arises is that, is this viparitani? Is it just the opposite? Special mercy being that he takes away everything, and special mercy being that one can remain in an opulent position. And that's the special mercy of the Lord. Is this viparitani? Is it just the opposite? Are we talking about opposites here? Well, yes and no. Spiritual life is a lawyer's dream, actually. Because you can have it both ways, yes and no. So is this a contradiction? Yes and no. But let's look at why it's not a contradiction. It's not a contradiction. Let's look at that first. And to do this, I want to refer to a verse from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the eighth canto, the prayers of Queen Kunti, that very much parallels the verse here today. The verse here today is talking about good birth, education, wealth, different opulences that one may have, the ornaments that every materialist is looking for. Everyone wants to ornament themselves with personal beauty, with money, wealth, the trappings of wealth, the signs of wealth. It's interesting, different cultures. In India, wealthy people don't show their wealth. I talked to my friend Devaki Nandan. He's a big collector, devotee leader in the Mumbai temple, Juhu. And he was telling me that the most wealthy people in Bombay, you'd never know that they're wealthy. You'd never know. Because in that culture, showing one's wealth is not the way that things are done. In our culture here in America, it's a little different. As soon as you get a little opulence, you want to show it off. But not there. So, materially speaking, everyone wants to show these things: good wealth, high education, personal beauty. Those are the ornaments that one wants to display. But these things are something else. So the verse from Queen Kuti's prayers, famous verse, Janmaishvara Shuti Shri Bir Edamana Madat Puman Naivart Hat Yabi Dat Tumbai Twam Akinchana Gochara. My Lord, your lordship can be easily approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who's on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, education, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So, materially speaking, these things are desirable. But spiritually speaking, they are very, very detrimental to our advancement in Krishna consciousness. And why that is so is explained in this verse, Queen Kuti's verse, particularly the words akinchana gocharam. Akinchana gocharam. One who is materially exhausted. So what does that mean, materially exhausted? Does it mean that one has nothing? Or does it mean that one's consciousness is not absorbed in having something? Srila Prabhupada told a story, a very interesting story, comparing two historical figures. The first was from the 20th century. His name was C.R. Das. C.R. Das was a very prominent barrister, Calcutta gentleman, very prominent in Gandhi's movement for the independence of India from Britain. Actually, just a little bit about the character of this man, because I wouldn't want this story to put him in a bad light only. But actually, he's a very, very pious man. His father, somehow or another, had accumulated a lot of debts. And by that time in India, which was in the 1920s or a little earlier, the tradition of the son accepting the debts of the father had sort of already faded. But his father had accumulated lakhs of rupees in debt. And then when C.R. Das became a prominent barrister and started earning great wealth, he called all those debtors, even though not required, either culturally or legally, although not required, he called all those debtors and said, I have money now. My father owed you money. Please take it. And so he was a good character, also very charitably disposed. And in his career as a barrister, a lawyer, he was earning about 50,000 rupees per month. In that time, quite a large sum of money. Very wealthy man. And as I said, he was very intimately related with Gandhi's movement. At one point, Gandhi decided that they should not cooperate with the British government at all, and that even the barristers, the lawyers, they should not appear in the British courts. And so Mr. C.R. Das objected to this vehemently. He objected to it. He said, no, I earn my livelihood this way. I'm earning a good livelihood. I can utilize that money for our independent struggle. I'm willing to give everything for that. Take all my money for that. But don't stop me from going to the court to earn like that. But Gandhi told him, no, I don't want your money. I want you. And so Prabhupada points out two things about him. Again, his character. One is that although he argued vehemently in the meetings that they were having about taking this decision, once the decision was taken, he cooperated fully. He wasn't going to go away just because he didn't get his way. Because the majority had agreed like that, he agreed to go along with that. And so he stopped going to the court, and he became poverty-stricken. Not poverty-stricken. Gandhi's movement or organization, what it was, they gave him 500 rupees a month. So he couldn't make it on 500 rupees a month. And actually what happened was is that a few months, within a year after giving up his profession, he died. He couldn't live without the ornaments of that material wealth. Good position, money, personal beauty, all these things, which are ornaments to the materialist, he could not live without them. And therefore, within a year of giving up these things, even though he was such a pious person, even though he had such good character, because he gave them up for a material cause, Gandhi's independence movement, within a year he died. He could not do it. Now Prabhupada compared him to Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami was also engaged with the Mandalapati. Twaktva Purnama Shesha Mandalapati was described, Goswamis. They were mixing with all the aristocracy. They were ministers, Rupa and Sanatan. They were ministers in the government of Nawab Hussein Shah, always dealing with the top people in society. So much wealth at their disposal. So educated they were. But they gave it all up for the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what was the result? What was the result of their giving that up? Prabhupada points out the difference between C.R. Das and Rupa Goswami is that Rupa Goswami did not die. He did not die. Because he was not sustained by these types of material ornaments. These material ornaments, Janmaishwara, Shruti, Shribi. These kind of things were not what maintained him. As a Vaishnava, he was maintained by something else. And so he did not die. So what is that something else? If we understand what is that something else, then we can get some understanding what these words akinchana gocha really mean. Materially exhausted. Does it mean not possessing something? Or does it mean possessing something? Akinchana gotra. Because you see, when you're akinchana gotra, the other key word in this verse from Queen Tunti's prayers is abhidhatum, with feeling. To address in feeling. If you're not a kinchana gotra, you cannot address the Lord with feeling. So what is this with feeling that's a key to a kinchana gotra? Well, when I was in Mayapur for the GBC meetings last month, Part of the things that I do there every year is I go to all the different schools that have their annual programs. And the national school, Bhaktivedanta National School, was having their annual program. And the children there, mainly Bengali children, that school's Bengali, mainly, it's English medium, but it's mainly for Bengalis. The children there put on a play. And I think that play was the best play I've ever seen in ISKCON. It was the best play I've ever seen in ISKCON. And that's just not just my opinion. Others that I talked to with separately, they also felt that way about this play. And the reason why we felt that way is because of this abhidhatum, this feeling which was expressed by the children in this play. They did a play called Three Logs of Wood. Maybe you know the story. It's about the appearance of, it's about Lord Jagannath and about how Krishna, Balaram, and Subhadra go back to Vrindavan and visit Vrindavan. These children, although they were very small, they portrayed the emotions in this play so well that it was just overwhelming. Just overwhelming. And the principal of the school has promised to send me a video of that, and maybe I can show it here to everybody. But just overwhelming, the way these children acted. The feelings of the spiritual world. Prabhupada himself tells how when he was a young boy, they did a play like that. And they were trained for almost a year, I think he said, again and again. And when they did the play, they were so good that the whole audience was just crying when they saw that play. It was almost like that in this play. So wonderful they did. But the point is that they displayed the feelings of the spiritual world. So what sustains one who is a Kinchana Gotra, who, like Rupa Goswami, can give up this material wealth, these ornaments? What are the ornaments that sustain one? Because it's not that one can be void. One has to be sustained by something. So what are the ornaments that sustain the Vaishnavas? Well, one is this feeling that's there. The loving exchanges the Lord engages in with his devotees. That is so sweet that it enables one to give up anything, any material benefit, any material ornament that one may seek after. It's easily given up when one experiences the loving exchanges between the Lord and his devotees. So I did a little searching, actually, about what is the ornament of a Vaishnava. And I came up with two things. And these things also sustain the lives of the Vaishnavas. One is gentle behavior. One is gentle behavior. Another play that I saw there in Mayapur, and we do more than just go to plays there, but another play that I saw was done by the students of the Mayapur Institute. Nanda teaches there, Mayapur Institute. They have Bhakti Shastri, so they have students from all over the world come there, actually. And the students did a play on the life of Srinivasacharya. And of course, we know Srinivasacharya was related with Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamananda. And so the play very nicely depicted all of the gentle, loving, humble behavior exhibited between all these devotees. It was so nice that you could get some perception that Vaishnavas actually aren't humans. Human beings are one thing, especially in this age of Kali. Human beings, their interactions are characterized by the type of things that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he's talking about material ornaments, says are envy and egotism. Those things characterize human society. But in the interaction between Vaishnavas, as displayed in this play with the life of Srinivasacharya, Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamananda Prabhu, you could see that actually these aren't human beings, these are Vaishnavas. because of the gentle behavior exhibited between them, the humility, the service attitude that was there amongst these devotees. Very, very powerful and satisfying. Again, getting back to akinchana and gochara. How can you be satisfied without all these material opulences? By being imbued with the spiritual opulences, sadhubhushanam. Sadhubhushanam, what are the ornaments of the Vaishnava, of the sadhu? Humility and proper behavior. Actually, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he instructed Srila Sanatana Goswami that he should write the Hari Bhakti Vilas and describe the behavior of the Vaishnava. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, a couple of verses here that I'll just read, it said that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave Srila Sanatana Goswami instruction in the behavior of a Vaishnava. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very stern in his behavior, and likewise he demanded that all devotees follow Vaishnava etiquette strictly. He said, "My dear Sanatan, although you are the deliverer of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristic of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnava etiquette. Maintenance of the Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. If one transgresses the laws of etiquette, people will make fun of him, and thus he is vanquished in both this world and the next." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so concerned about the etiquette of the Lord's devotees that he instructed Srila Sanatana Goswami to write Vishnu Smriti, Hari Bhakti Vilas, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, etiquette is the ornament of Vaishnava, and humility is the ornament of a Vaishnava. These two things, although they seem to be restrictions, are actually something different. Again, here we are with the apparent contradictions. It seems like it's a restriction, but actually it's a blessing. It's not a restriction, it's a blessing. It seems like when it says in Bhagavad Gita the four regulative principles of freedom, the regulative principles of freedom, that it's a restriction. But so how could, if it's a restriction, how could it be a freedom? Well, if we understand things correctly, we can understand, yes, it is a freedom. It is a freedom. Because tvam akinchana gocharam. If you give up the material aspirations, then you are free to feel deep emotions in relation with the spiritual, the Lord and his devotees. And that automatically means gentle behavior, etiquette, and humility. And these things are so satisfying that the last thing that your mind will think of are all the material opulences that are supposedly things that will set you free in this material world. And finally, I just want to leave you with a couple of examples of Vaishnava behavior and etiquette, those that live by these ornaments, because their lives are very instructive to us. So one is Srila Ishwar Puri. Ishwar Puri. I'll just read this section. Upon arriving there, no, where is that? Come on. Okay, here. When Mother Sachi saw that Sri Chaitanya was happily engaged in his studies, her own ecstasy increased. At that time, Srila Ishvarapuri came to Navadvip in disguise. Chaitanya Bhagavat records that Ishvarapuri was overwhelmed with the ecstasy of Krishna Ras, and yet, as he was very dear to Krishna, he was also very humble and didn't want to attract any attention to himself as a great devotee. There you go, some opposites right there. He is a great devotee, but he didn't want to attract any attention to himself. That's a characteristic of a Vaishnava. They live these contradictions. So that no one would know who he was, he hid his real identity and went to the temple of Advaita. Upon arriving there, he found that Advaita was busy in the service to the Lord in the temple. So he came in and sat down very cautiously and timidly. But the power of a great Vaishnava is not easily hidden from another great Vaishnava. Again and again, Advaita Acharya kept looking away from his duties in the direction of Ishvarapuri. Finally, he asked him, "Oh, Father, who are you?" With great humility, Ishvara introduced himself, saying, "I am a Sudra of the lowest class." In this way, the jewel of learned scholars and the best of the renounced, Ishvarapuri, showed how humility is the true ornament of a Vaishnava. So I'll just stop there. Are there any comments or questions about these subject matters? Anybody has? Yes, Prabhu.
So you were saying that that to have these feelings, that one has to be not so interested in material things. So if a person has an engagement in the world to make money or whatever, how do you maintain, I guess, enthusiasm or some interest in that, but not get caught up into it so that you lose them?
Well, it depends where you place your feelings. We have these feelings. We're sentient beings, part and parcel of Krishna. So we have these feelings. So where do we place them? Do we place all of our faith in just material conceptions or material possessions? Or do we place our feelings, our faith in Krishna? Just like in today's verse here, this word is used, vaya, by age, especially youth, when one is capable of doing many things. Youth is very bewildering because it makes us think that we're the doer and we can do. But if we have youth and we're thinking that I'm just a servant, and this youth, just as all of you did, gave your youth to Krishna, gave your youth to Prabhupada. If we think like that, let me give my youth, my ability to do things to Krishna, then that is the correct use of this material opulence. And I won't become bewildered by it. Not that I have to be separated from it. But it can be utilized properly because my feeling, my understanding is in the right place. So situating the heart in the right place is the most important thing. Then things will follow from there. But if our heart is contaminated with this idea that I'm the doer, that this is my wealth, this is my personal beauty, this is my education, then the thought will come, well, I can use it for me then rather than using it for Krishna. So where we put our feelings, that makes the difference of how we'll be situated with these material opulences. Not that they, again, have to be given up. Prabhupada's saying here, that's not the special mercy of the Lord. Special mercy of the Lord is when one continues but does not become unnecessarily proud, falsely thinking that he is the proprietor. So that's obviously a struggle. How to go from thinking that these things belong to me and that I'm the doer to that these are gifts of Krishna and they should be used in his service. But that's what our purpose of life is, to make that transition. How to use these things in Krishna's service. Yes, Rule.
It's actually also a verse in Jiva Dharma. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Antara Nishtakara Baya Loka Vyavyahar. So he says, internally, a person should be really deeply absorbed. And externally, he should deal with the world in a worldly way. So if you have a job or profession or craft or whatever it might be, those things we should deal with in their worldly way, but internally we should be absorbed very deeply in Krishna consciousness. But even in Mahaprabhu's Leela, there were many examples. I'm trying to think, I can't remember who it is now. They actually owed taxes to the government. And somebody wanted to intercede on their behalf, and Mahaprabhu was not going to do it. He was saying, no, whatever.
Gopinath Patanayak.
Yes. Says, whatever is due to worldly things, you do that. Even in the case of our Goswamis, in terms of their secular life, Sanatan Goswami Prabhupada, he was like calling in sick. So he didn't just outright tell him, hey, you know, Krishna consciousness is the best thing in the world. You're all in Maya. I'm just going to. He actually told him, like he was calling in sick, so then he would stay home and study Srimad Bhagavatam. So the idea of dealing with the world naturally, not in an artificial way, same time internally being very absorbed, this was the recommendation.
Okay. Anyone else have any? Yes.
I was wondering if you could very simply maybe put the price on it to obtain these things. What is it that we can do to pay this big price of getting these ornaments when actually they're like humility and all these things, but it seems like you have to have those things to get those things. So, but what is your simple
advice? Oh, lolium. Lolium. An intense eagerness, a desire to have them. That's the only way that you can get them. You have to get them by the mercy of the Lord, and therefore you have to beg for the mercy of the Lord. You have to cry for the mercy of the Lord. Gauravinda Maharaj used to say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is open to crying school. How to cry for Krishna. That's something we don't know how to do. But it's something that we have to do. Because it's not that by your personal beauty, by your material opulence, by your high education, that these things will attract Krishna. The only thing that will attract Krishna is an intense eagerness. Sarupa Goswami says in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, only by developing intense eagerness will one be able to attain these things. Again, by feeling. Where you place your feelings matters. We all have feelings, so what are you going to do with them? You can use them to entangle yourself further in this material world, or you can use them to liberate yourself, putting your feelings in the association of devotees and the Lord, in the Lord's service. Yes, Muhammad.
In regards to lolium, we often see that when another person has a particular quality, it's infectious. I was once taking prasadam with a very big devotee, and he ate three plates, and I also ate three plates. And usually I max out at two. And Mahanidhi Swami said, he told a story that there was a pujari at the Radha Damodar temple who went mad. And so he asked the devotee in charge, he said, what happened? And he said, Radha Darshan. He got Radharani's Darshan. And the person said it nonchalantly, like, you know, that happens every day. And the pujari couldn't do the puja anymore. So he said, you know, we've heard about these things, but to actually see it, come in contact with it, he said, the effect it had on him was a totally different experience. So we always are hearing about the qualities, and and hearing about Sanatana Goswami and his humility and so forth. But when you actually associate with someone who exhibit those qualities, it generally affects the heart in a deep way. And then the desire, you're saying the greed, the desire, often that's where the desire comes from. And I think we see this in the opposite way when we're around people who are a little proud. Sometimes it pushes our ego and we react. So I've also had that experience in seeing, developing a desire to develop a quality I really wasn't manifesting or didn't have a strong desire for by seeing another person exhibit that quality. And I became attracted to it. I said, that's wonderful. I'd like to be like them.
Actually, if you look around in a society of devotees that we find ourselves in, you'll see examples of all these things. You see examples of these things. And as Mahatma Buddha was saying, when you recognize it, then you can get inspiration and you can also develop a desire. But look around, you'll see it. You can see all these things that are described in the Shastra right in our own association.
According to the sahajas are supposed to be very expert at imitating these qualities, so how we can discern what is genuine qualities and what are artificial.
I asked a similar question to that to Lakshminath, who was giving the Sunday feast lecture, and I think the response is the same, is that the genuine taste will last, it will endure, whereas the other shadow will just appear for some time and then go away. I think Prabhupada sort of helped us visualize it when he said things like that someone will be exhibiting some ecstasy, signs of ecstasy, then they'll be outside the temple smoking bidis or something like that. And so genuine ecstasy doesn't come and go like that. It's consistently manifest. So anything else? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.